she says. I thought you'd be all over this, considering your obsession on Tumblr lately. You know what? I say, 1 second from really going off. Leave me alone. Have fun in your little protest. I want to fight every person I pass, Floyd Mayweather style. They're so damn excited about getting a day off. Khalil's in a grave. He can't get a day off from that shit. I live it every single day, too. In class, I toss my backpack on the floor and throw myself into my seat. When Haley and Maya come in, I give them a stank eye and silently dare them to say shit to me. I'm breaking all of my Williamson Star rules with zero fucks to give. Chris gets there before the bell rings, headphones draped around his neck. He comes down my aisle and squeezes my nose, going, honk, honk, because for some reason it's hilarious to him. Usually I laugh and swat at him, but today, yeah, I'm not in the mood. I just swat. Kinda hard, too. He goes, ow, and gives his hand a quick shake. What's wrong with you? I don't respond. If I open my mouth, I'll explode. He crouches beside my desk and shakes my thigh. Star? You okay? Our teacher, balding, stumpy Mr. Warren, clears his throat.
Mr. Bryant, my class is not the love connection. Please have a seat.
Chris slides into the desk next to mine.
What's wrong with her?
He whispers to Haley. She plays dumb and says, dunno. Mr. Warren tells us to take out our MacBooks and begins the lesson on British literature. Not even 5 minutes in, someone says,
Justice for Khalil!
Justice for Khalil! The others chant, Justice for Khalil!
Mr. Warren tells them to stop, but they get louder and pound their fists on the desks. I want to puke and scream and cry. My classmates stampede toward the door. Maya's the last one out. She glances back at me, then at Haley, who motions her to come on. Maya follows her out. I think I'm done following Haley. In the hall, chants for Khalil go off like sirens. Unlike Haley, some of them may not care that he was a drug dealer. They might be almost as upset as I am. But since I know why Remy started this protest, I stay in my seat. Chris does too for some reason. His desk scrapes the floor as it scoots closer to mine until they touch. He brushes my tears with his thumb.
You knew him, didn't you?
He says. I nod.
Oh, says Mr. Warren. I am so sorry, Star. You don't have to. You can call your parents, you know.
I wipe my face. The last thing I want is Mama making a fuss because I can't handle all this. Worse, I don't want to be unable to handle it. Can you continue with the lesson, sir? I ask. The distraction would be nice. He smiles sadly and does as I ask. For the rest of the day, sometimes Chris and I are the only ones in our classes. Sometimes one or two other people join us. People go out of their way to tell me they think Khalil's death is bullshit, but that Remy's reason for protesting is bullshit, too. I mean, this sophomore girl comes up to me in the hall and explains that she supports the cause but decided to go back to class after she heard why they were really protesting. They act like I'm the official representative of the black race, and they owe me an explanation. I think I understand, though. If I sit out a protest, I'm making a statement. But if they sit out a protest, they look racist. At lunch, Chris and I head to our table near the vending machines. Jess, with her perfect pixie cut, is the only one there, eating cheese fries and reading her phone. Hey? I ask, more than say. I'm surprised she's here.
Sup?
She nods. Have a seat. As you can see, there's plenty of room. I sit beside her and Chris sits on the other side of me. Jess and I have played basketball together for 3 years, and she's put her head on my shoulder for 2 of them, but I'm ashamed to admit I don't know much about her. I do know she's a senior. Her parents are attorneys, and she works at a bookstore. I didn't know that she'd skip the protest. I guess I'm staring at her hard, because she says, "I don't use dead people to get out of class." If I wasn't straight, I would totally date her for saying that. This time, I rest my head on her shoulder. She pats my hair and says, "White people do stupid shit sometimes." Jess is white. Seven and Layla join us with their trays. Seven holds his fist out to me. I bump it. "Seven," Jess says, and they fist bump too. I had no idea they were cool like that. "I take it we're protesting the get-out-of-class protest?"
"Yup," Seven says, "protesting the get-out-of-class protest."
Seven and I get Sakani after school, and he won't shut up about the news cameras he saw from his classroom window, because he's Sakani, and he came into this world looking for a camera. I have too many selfies of him on my phone giving the light-skinned face, his eyes squinted and eyebrows raised.
"Are y'all gonna be on the news?" he asks.
"Nah," says Seven, "don't need to be."
We could go home, lock the door, and fight over the TV like we always do, or we could help Daddy at the store. We go to the store. Daddy stands in the doorway watching a reporter and camera operator set up in front of Mr. Lewis's shop. Of course, when Sakani sees the camera, he says, "Oh, I want to be on TV." "Shut up," I say. "No, you don't."
"Yes, I do. You don't know what I want."
The car stops, and Sakani pushes my seat forward, sending my chin into the dashboard as he jumps out.
"Daddy, I want to be on TV."
I rub my chin. His hyper butt is going to kill me one day. Daddy holds Sakani by the shoulders.
"Calm down, man. You're not going to be on TV." "What's going on?"
Seven asks when we get out.
"Some cops got jumped around the corner,"
Daddy says, one arm around Sakani's chest to keep him still.
"Jumped?" I say.
"Yeah, they pulled them out their patrol car and stomped them. Gray Boys."
The code name for King Lords.
"Damn."
"I heard what happened at y'all school," Daddy says. "Everything cool?"
"Yeah," I give the easy answer. "We're good." Mr. Lewis adjusts his clothes and runs a hand over his afro. The reporter says something, and he lets out a belly-jiggling laugh.
"What this fool about to say?"
Daddy wonders.
"We go live in 5,
says the camera operator. And all I can think is, please don't put Mr. Lewis on live TV.
4, 3, 2, 1.
"That's right, Joe," the reporter says. "I'm here with Mr. Cedric Lewis, Jr., who witnessed the incident involving the officers today. Can you tell us what you saw, Mr. Lewis?"
"He ain't witnessed nothing," Daddy tells us. "Was in his shop the whole time. I told him what happened."
"I sure can," Mr. Lewis says. "Them boys pulled those officers out their car. They weren't doing nothing either. Just sitting there and got beat like dogs. Ridiculous, you hear me? Re-damn-diculous."
Somebody's gonna turn Mr. Lewis into a meme. He's making a fool out of himself and doesn't even know it. "Do you think that it was retaliation for the Khalil Harris case?" the reporter asks.
"I sure do." "Which is stupid. These thugs been terrorizing Garden Heights for years. How they gonna get mad now? What, 'cause they didn't kill him themselves? The president and all of them searching for terrorists. But I'll name one right now they can come get."
"Don't do it, Mr. Lewis," Daddy prays. "Don't do it." Of course he does.
His name King. And he lived right here in Garden Heights. Probably the biggest drug dealer in the city. He over that King Lord's gang. Come get him if you want to get somebody. Wasn't nobody but his boys who did that to them cops anyway. We sick of this. Somebody march about that.
Daddy covers Sakani's ears. Every cuss word that follows equals a dollar in Sakani's jar if he hears it.
Shit. Daddy hisses. Shit, 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 this mother.
He snitched, says Seven. On live TV, I add. Daddy keeps saying,
shit, shit, shit.
Do you think that the curfew the mayor announced today will prevent incidents like this? The reporter asks Mr. Lewis. I look at Daddy. What curfew? He takes his hands off Sakani's ears.
Every business in Garden Heights gotta close by 9, and nobody can be in the streets after 10. Lights out. Like in prison.
So you'll be home tonight, Daddy? Sakani asks. Daddy smiles and pulls him closer.
Yeah, man. After you do your homework, I can show you a thing or two on Madden.
The reporter wraps up her interview. Daddy waits until she and the camera operator leave, and then goes over to Mr. Lewis.
You crazy?
He asks.
What? 'Cause I told the truth?
Mr. Lewis says.
Man, you can't be going on live TV snitching like that. You a dead man walking. You know that, right?
I ain't scared of that nigga,
Mr. Lewis says real loud, for everybody to hear.
You scared of him?
Nah, but I know how the game work.
I'm too old for games. You ought to be too.
Mr. Lewis, listen.
Now, you listen here, boy. I fought a war, came back and fought one here. See this?
He lifts up his pants leg, revealing a plaid sock over a prosthetic.
Lost it in the war. This right here?
He lifts his shirt to his underarm. There's a thin pink scar stretching from his back to his swollen belly.
Got it after some white boys cut me 'cause I drank from their fountain.
He lets his shirt fall down.
I done faced a whole lot worse than some so-called king. Ain't nothing he can do but kill me. And if that's how I gotta go for speaking the truth, that's how I gotta go.
You don't get it,
Daddy says.
Yeah, I do. Hell, I get you. Walking around here claiming you ain't a gangster no more. Claiming you trying to change stuff, but still following all of that don't snitch mess. And you teaching them kids the same thing, ain't you? King's still controlling your dumb ass. And you're too stupid to realize it.
Stupid? How you gonna call me stupid when you the one snitching on live TV?
A familiar whoop-whoop sound alarms us. Oh, God. The patrol car with flashing lights cruises down the street. It stops next to Daddy and Mr. Lewis. Two officers get out, one black, one white. Their hands linger too close to the guns at their waists. No, no, no.
We got a problem here?
The black one asks, looking squarely at Daddy. He's bald, just like Daddy, but older, taller, bigger.
No, sir, officer,
Daddy says. His hands that were once in his jeans pockets are visible at his sides.
You sure about that?
The younger white one asks.
It didn't seem that way to us.
We were just talking, officers,
Mr. Lewis says, much softer than he was minutes ago. His hands are at his sides, too. His parents must have had the talk with him when he was 12.
To me, it looks like this young man was harassing you, sir,
the black one says, still looking at Daddy. He hasn't looked at Mr. Lewis yet. I wonder if it's because Mr. Lewis isn't wearing an NWA t-shirt, or because there aren't tattoos all on his arms, or because he's not wearing somewhat baggy jeans and a backwards cap.
You got some ID on you?
The black cop asked Daddy.
Sir, I was about to go back to my store. I said, do you have some ID on you?
My hands shake. Breakfast, lunch, and everything else churns in my stomach, ready to come back up my throat. They're gonna take Daddy from me.
What's going on?
I turn around. Tim, Mr. Rubin's nephew, walks over to us. People have stopped on the sidewalk across the street.
I'm gonna reach for my ID,
Daddy says.
It's in my back pocket, right?
Daddy, I say. Daddy keeps his eyes on the officer.
Y'all go in the store, right? It's okay.
We don't move, though. Daddy's hand slowly goes to his back pocket, and I look from his hands to theirs, watching to see if they're going to make a move for their guns. Daddy removes his wallet, the leather one I bought for him for Father's Day, with his initials embossed on it. He shows it to them.
See, my ID is in here.
His voice has never sounded so small.
The black officer takes the wallet and opens it.
Oh, he says, Maverick Carter.
He exchanges a look with his partner. Both of them look at me.
My heart stops. They've realized I'm the witness.
There must be a file that lists my parents' names on it, or the detectives blabbed, and now everyone at the station knows our names. Or they could have gotten it from Uncle Carlos somehow. I don't know how it happened, but it happened. And if something happens to Daddy...
The black officer looks at him.
Get on the ground, hands behind your back. But... On the ground, face down! He yells. Now!
Daddy looks at us. His expression apologizes for the fact that we have to see this. He gets down on one knee and lowers himself to the ground, face down. His hands go behind his back and his fingers interlock.
Where's that camera operator now? Why can't this be on the news?
Now, wait a minute, officer, Mr. Lewis says. Me and him were just talking.
Sir, go inside,
the white cop tells him.
But he didn't do anything, Seven says. Boy, go inside,
the black cop says.
No, that's my father, and Seven,
Daddy yells. Even though he's lying on the concrete, there's enough authority in his voice to make Seven shut up. The black officer checks Daddy while his partner glances around at all of the onlookers. There's quite a few of us now. Ms. Yvette and a couple of her clients stand in her doorway, towels around the client's shoulders. A car has stopped in the street.
Everyone go about your own business, the white one says.
No, sir, says Tim. This is our business.
The black cop keeps his knee on Daddy's back as he searches him. He pats him down once, twice, three times, just like 115 did Khalil. Nothing.
Larry,
the white cop says. The black one, who must be Larry, looks up at him, then at all the people who have gathered around. Larry takes his knee off Daddy's back and stands.
Get up,
he says. Slowly, Daddy gets to his feet. Larry glances at me. Bile pools in my mouth. He turns to Daddy and says,
I'm keeping an eye on you, boy. Remember that.
Daddy's jaw looks rock hard. The cops drive off. The car that had stopped in the street leaves, and all of the onlookers go on about their business. One person hollers out,
It's all right, Maverick!
Daddy looks at the sky and blinks the way I do when I don't want to cry. He clenches and unclenches his hands. Mr. Lewis touches his back.
Come on, son.
He guides Daddy our way, but they pass us and go into the store. Tim follows them.
Why did they do Daddy like that?
Sakani asks softly. He looks at me and Seven with tears in his eyes. Seven wraps an arm around him.
I don't know, man.
I know. I go in the store. Devante leans against a broom near the cash register, wearing one of those ugly green aprons Daddy tries to make me and Seven wear when we work in the store. There's a pang in my chest. Khalil wore one, too. Devante's talking to Kenya as she holds a basket full of groceries. When the bell on the door clangs behind me, both of them look my way.
Yo, what happened?
Devante asks.
Was that the cops outside?
Says Kenya. From here I see Mr. Lewis and Tim standing in the doorway of Daddy's office. He must be in there. Yeah, I answer Kenya, heading toward the back. Kenya and Devante follow me, asking about 50 million questions that I don't have time to answer. Papers are scattered all on the office floor. Daddy's hunched over his desk, his back moving up and down with each heavy breath. He pounds the desk.
Fuck!
Daddy once told me there's a rage passed down to every black man from his ancestors, born the moment they couldn't stop the slave masters from hurting their families. Daddy also said there's nothing more dangerous than when that rage is activated.
Let it out, son,
Mr. Lewis tells him.
Fuck them pigs, man, Tim says. They only did that shit 'cause they know about Star.
Wait, what? Daddy glances over his shoulder. His eyes are puffy and wet, like he's been crying.
The hell you talking about, Tim? One of the homeboys saw you, Lisa, and your baby girl getting out an ambulance at the crime scene that night, Tim says. Word spread around the neighborhood, and folks think she's the witness they've been talking about on the news.
Oh, shit.
Star, go ring Kenya up, Daddy says. Vante, finish them floors.
I head for the cash register, passing Seven and Sakani. The neighborhood knows. I ring Kenya up, my stomach knotted the whole time. If the neighborhood knows, it won't be long until people outside of Garden Heights know. And then what?
You rang that up twice,
Kenya says.
Huh?
The milk. You rang it up twice, Star? Oh. I cancel one of the milks and put the carton into a bag. Kenya's probably cooking for herself and Lyric tonight. She does that sometimes. I ring up the rest of her stuff, take her money, and hand her the change. She stares at me a second, then says,
"Were you really the one with him?"
My throat is thick. Does it matter?
Yeah, it matters. Why you keeping quiet about it? Like you hiding or something.
Don't say it that way.
But it is that way, right?
I sigh. Kenya, stop. You don't understand, all right? Kenya folds her arms.
What's to understand?
A lot. I don't mean to yell, but damn, I can't go around telling people that shit.
Why not?
Because you ain't see what the cops just did to my dad, 'cause they know I'm the witness?
So you gonna let the police stop you from speaking out for Khalil? I thought you cared about him way more than that.
I do. I care more than she may ever know.
I already talked to the cops, Kenya. Nothing happened. What else am I supposed to do?
Go on TV or something, I don't know, she says.
Tell everybody what really happened that night. They're not even giving his side of the story. You're letting them trash talk him.
Excuse, how the hell am I letting them do anything?
You hear all the stuff they're saying about him on the news, calling him a thug and stuff, and you know that ain't Khalil. I bet if he was one of your private school friends, you'd be all on TV defending him and shit.
Are you for real?
Hell yeah, she says. You dropped him for them bougie-ass kids, and you know it. You probably would have dropped me if I didn't come around, because of my brother.
That's not true.
You sure?
I'm not.
Kenya shakes her head.
Fucked up part about this? The Khalil I know would have jumped on TV in a hot second and told everybody what happened that night if it meant defending you. And you can't do the same for him.
It's a verbal slap. The worst kind, too, because it's the truth.
Kenya gets her bags.
I'm just saying, Star, if I could change what happens at my house with my mama and daddy, I would. Here you are, with a chance to help change what happens in our whole neighborhood, and you staying quiet, like a coward.
Kenya leaves. Tim and Mr. Lewis aren't far behind her. Tim gives me the black power fist on his way out. I don't deserve it, though. I head to Daddy's office. Seven standing in the doorway, and Daddy sitting on his desk. Sikani's next to him, nodding along to whatever Daddy's saying, but looking sad. Reminds me of the time Daddy and Mama had the talk with me. Guess Daddy decided not to wait until Sikani's 12. Daddy sees me.
Sev, go cover the cash register. Take Sikani with you. About time he learned.
Aw, oh, man, Sikani groans. Don't blame him. The more you learn to do at the store, the more you're expected to do at the store.
Daddy pats the now empty spot beside him on the desk. I hop up on it. His office has just enough space for the desk and a file cabinet. Framed photographs crowd the walls, like the one of him and Mama at the courthouse the day they got married. Her belly, a.k.a. me, big and round. Pictures of me and my brothers as babies. And this one picture from about 7 years ago when my parents took the three of us to the mall for one of those JCPenney family portraits. They dressed alike in baseball jerseys, baggy jeans, and Timberlands. Tacky.
You a'ight? Daddy asks.
Are you?
I will be, he says. Just hate that you and your brothers had to see that shit.
They only did it 'cause of me.
Nah, baby. They started that before they knew about you.
But that didn't help. I stare at my J's as I kick my feet back and forth. Kenya called me a coward for not speaking out.
She didn't mean it. She going through a lot, that's all. King throwing Aisha around like a rag doll every single night.
But she's right. My voice cracks. I'm this close to crying. I am a coward. After seeing what they did to you, I don't want to say shit now.
Hey.
Daddy takes my chin, so I have no choice but to look at him.
Don't fall for that trap. That's what they want. If you don't want to speak out, that's up to you. But don't let it be because you're scared of them. Who do I tell you that you have to fear?
Nobody but God. And you and Mama. Especially Mama when she's extremely pissed. He chuckles.
Yeah. The list ends there. You ain't got nothing or nobody else to fear. You see this?
He rolls up his shirt sleeve, revealing the tattoo of my baby picture on his upper arm.
What'd it say at the bottom?
Something to live for, something to die for, I say, without really looking. I've seen it my whole life.
Exactly. You and your brothers are something to live for and something to die for. And I'll do whatever I gotta do to protect you.
He kisses my forehead.
If you're ready to talk, baby, talk. I got your back.
12. I'm luring Bricks inside when it passes out front. I watch it crawl down the street for the longest time till I get the sense to alert somebody.
Daddy!
He looks up from pulling weeds around his bell peppers.
Are they for real with that?
The tank resembles the ones they show on the news when talking about war in the Middle East. It's the size of two Hummers. The blue and white lights on the front make the street almost as bright as it is in daytime. An officer is positioned on top, wearing a vest and a helmet. He points his rifle ahead. A voice booms from the armored vehicle.
All persons found violating the curfew will be subject to arrest.
Daddy pulls more weeds.
Some bullshit.
Bricks follows the piece of bologna I dangle in front of him all the way to his spot in the kitchen. He sits there all content, chomping on it and the rest of his food. Bricks won't act crazy as long as Daddy's home. All of us are kinda like Bricks, really. Daddy being home means Mama won't sit up all night, Sekani won't flinch all the time, and Seven won't have to be the man of the house. I'll sleep better, too. Daddy comes in, dusting caked dirt off his hands.
Them roses dying.
Bricks, you've been pissing on my roses.
Bricks's head perks up. He locks his eyes with Daddy's, but eventually lowers his head.
I bet not catch you doing it, Daddy says, or we gonna have a problem.
Bricks lowers his eyes, too. I grab a paper towel and a slice of pizza from the box on the counter. This is like my fourth slice tonight. Mama bought two huge pies from Sal's on the other side of the freeway. Italians own it, so the pizza is thin, herby. Is that a word? And good.
You finished your homework?
Daddy asks. Yep. A lie. He washes his hands at the kitchen sink.
Got any tests this week?
Trig on Friday.
You studied for it?
Yep. Another lie.
Good.
He gets the grapes out the refrigerator.
You still got that old laptop? The one you had before we bought you that expensive-ass fruit one?
I laugh. It's an Apple MacBook, Daddy.
It damn sure wasn't the price of an Apple. Anyway, you got the old one?
Yeah.
Good. Give it to Seven. Tell him to look over it and make sure it's aight. I want Devontae to have it.
Why?
You pay bills?
No.
Then I ain't gotta answer that.
That's how he gets out of almost every argument with me. I should buy one of those cheap magazine subscriptions and say, yeah, I pay a bill, and what? It won't matter, though. I head to my room after I finish my pizza. Daddy's already gone to his and Mama's room. Their TV's on, and they're both lying on their stomachs on the bed. One of her legs on his as she types on her laptop. It's oddly adorable. Sometimes I watch them to get an idea of what I want one day.
You still mad at me about Devontae?
Daddy asks her. She doesn't answer, keeping her eyes on her laptop. He scrunches up his nose and gets all in her face.
You still mad at me?
Huh?
You still mad at me?
She laughs and playfully pushes at him. Move, boy. No, I'm not mad at you. Now give me a grape. He grins and feeds her a grape. And I just can't. The cuteness is too much. Yeah, they're my parents. But they're my OTP. Seriously. Daddy watches whatever she's doing on the computer, feeding her a grape every time he eats one. She's probably uploading the latest family snapshots on Facebook for our out-of-town relatives. With everything that's going on, what can she say? Sekani saw cops harass his daddy, but he's doing so well in school. Hashtag proud mom. Or, Star saw her best friend die. Keep her in your prayers. But my baby made the honor roll again. Hashtag blessed. Or even, tanks are rolling by outside, but Seven's been accepted into 6 colleges so far. Hashtag he is going places. I go to my room. Both my old and new laptops are on my desk, which is a mess. There's a huge pair of Daddy's Jordans next to my old laptop. The yellowed bottoms of the sneakers face the lamp, and a layer of saran wrap protects my concoction of detergent and toothpaste that'll eventually clean them.
Watching yellowed souls turn icy again is as satisfying as squeezing a blackhead and getting all the gunk out. Amazing. According to the lie I told Daddy, my homework is supposed to be done. But I've been on a Tumblr break, a.k.a. I haven't started my homework and have spent the last 2 hours on Tumblr. I started a new blog, The Khalil I Know. It doesn't have my name on it, just pictures of Khalil. In the first one, he's 13 with an afro. Uncle Carlos took us to a ranch so we could get a taste of country life. And Khalil's looking side-eyed at a horse that's beside him. I remember him saying, "If that thing makes a wrong move, I'm running." On Tumblr, I captioned the picture, "The Khalil I know was afraid of animals." I tagged it with his name. One person liked it and reblogged it. Then another and another. That made me post more pictures, like one of us in a bathtub when we were 4. You can't see our private parts because of all the suds, and I'm looking away from the camera. Miss Rosalie's sitting on the side of the tub beaming at us, and Khalil's beaming right back at her. I wrote, "The Khalil I know loved bubble baths almost as much as he loved his grandma." In just 2 hours, hundreds of people have liked and reblogged the pictures. I know it's not the same as getting on the news, like Kenya said, but I hope it helps. It's helping me, at least. Other people posted about Khalil, uploaded artwork of him, posted pictures of him that they show on the news. I think I've reblogged every single one. Funny, though, somebody posted a video clip of Tupac from back in the day. Okay, so every video clip of Tupac is from back in the day. He's got a little kid on his lap and is wearing a backward snapback that would be fly now. He explains thug life like Khalil said he did. The hate you give little infants fucks everybody. Pac spells out fucks because that kid is looking dead in his face. When Khalil told me what it meant, I kinda understood it. I really understand it now. I grab my old laptop when my phone buzzes on my desk. Mama returned it earlier, hallelujah, thank you, Black Jesus. She said it's only in case there's another situation at school. I got it back, though. Don't really care why. I'm hoping it's a text from Kenya. I sent her the link to my new Tumblr earlier. Thought she'd like to see it since she kind of pushed me to do it. But it's Chris. He took note from 7 with his all-caps texts. OMG! This Fresh Prince episode, Will's dad didn't take him with him. The asshole came back and left him again. Now he's having a breakdown with Uncle Phil. My eyes are sweating. Understandable. That's seriously the saddest episode ever. I text Chris back. Sorry, sad face. And your eyes aren't sweating. You're crying, babe. He replies, lies! I say, you ain't gotta lie, Craig. You ain't gotta lie. He responds, did you really use a line from Friday on me? So watching 90s movies is kinda our thing, too. I text back, yep. Wink, smiley face. He replies, bye, Felicia. I take the laptop to 7's room, phone in hand, in case Chris has another Fresh Prince breakdown. Some reggae chants meet me in the hall, followed by Kendrick Lamar rapping about being a hypocrite. 7 sits on the side of the lower bunk, an open computer tower at his feet. With his head down, his dreads hang loosely and make a curtain in front of his face. Devante sits cross-legged on the floor. His afro bobs to the song. A zombie version of Steve Jobs watches them from a poster on the wall, along with all these superheroes and Star Wars characters. There's a Slytherin comforter on the bottom bunk that I swear I'll steal one day. 7 and I are reverse HP fans. We liked the movies first, then the books. I got Khalil and Natasha hooked on them, too. Mama found the first movie for $1 at a thrift store back when we lived in the Cedar Grove projects. Seven and I said we were Slytherins, since almost all Slytherins were rich. When you're a kid in a one-bedroom in the projects, rich is the best thing anybody can be. Seven removes a silver box from the computer and examines it.
It's not even that old.
What are you doing? I ask.
Big D asked me to fix his computer. It needs some new DVD drives. He burnt his out making all them bootlegs.
My brother is the unofficial Garden Heights tech guy. Old ladies, hustlers, and everybody in between pay him to fix their computers and phones. He makes good money like that, too. A black garbage bag leans against the foot of the bunk bed with some clothes sticking out the top of it. Somebody put it over the fence and left it in our front yard. Seven, Sakani, and I found it when we came home from the store. We thought it may have been Devante's, but Seven looked inside and everything in it belonged to him. The stuff he had at his mama's house. He called Aisha. She said she was putting him out. King told her to. Seven. I'm sorry.
It's okay, Star.
But she shouldn't have.
I said it's okay.
He glances up at me.
All right. Don't sweat it.
All right, I say, as my phone vibrates. I hand Devante the laptop and look. Still no response from Kenya. Instead, it's a text from Maya. Are you mad at us?
What's this for?
Devante asks, staring at the laptop. Daddy wants you to have it, but he said let Seven check it out first. I tell him as I reply to Maya. What do you think?
What do you want me to have it for?
Devante asks. Maybe he wants to see if you actually know how to operate one, I tell Devante.
I know how to use a computer, Devante
says. He hits Seven, who's snickering. My phone buzzes three times. Maya has responded. Definitely mad. Can the three of us talk? Things have been awkward lately. Typical Maya. If Haley and I have any kind of disagreement, she tries to fix it. She has to know this won't be a kumbaya moment. I reply, okay, we'll let you know when I'm at my uncle's. Gunshots fire at rapid speed in the distance. I flinch.
Goddamn machine guns, Daddy says. Folks acting like this Iran or some shit.
No cussing, Daddy, Sakani says from the den.
Sorry, man. I'll add a dollar to the jar.
Two! You said the GD word.
Aye, two. Star, come to the kitchen for a second.
In the kitchen, Mama speaks in her other voice on the phone. Yes, ma'am. We want the same thing. She sees me. And here's my lovely daughter now. Could you hold, please? She covers the receiver. It's the DA. She would like to talk to you this week. Definitely not what I expected. Oh. Yeah, Mama says. Look, baby, if you're not comfortable with it. I am. I glance at Daddy. He nods. I can do it. Oh, she says, looking from me to Daddy and back. Okay. As long as you're sure. I think we should meet with Miss Ofra first, though. Possibly take her up on her offer to represent you.
Definitely, Daddy says. I don't trust them folks at the DA office.
So how about we see her tomorrow and meet with the DA later on this week? Mama asks. I grab another slice of pizza and take a bite. It's cold now, but cold pizza is the best pizza. So, 2 days of no school? Oh, you're going to school, she says. And did you eat any salad while you're eating all that pizza? I've had veggies, these little bitty peppers. They don't count when they're that little. Yeah, they do. If babies can count as humans when they're little, veggies can count as veggies when they're little.
That logic ain't working with me. So we'll meet with Miss Ofer tomorrow, and the DA on Wednesday. Sound like a plan?
Yeah, except the school part.
Mama uncovers the phone. Sorry for the delay. We can come in on Wednesday morning.
In the meantime, tell your boys, the mayor, and the police chief to get them fucking tanks out my neighborhood.
Daddy says loudly. Mama swats at him, but he's going down the hall.
Claim folks need to act peaceful, but rolling through here like we in a goddamn war.
$2, Daddy,
Sekani says. When Mama hangs up, I say, it wouldn't kill me to miss one day of school. I don't want to be there if they try that protest mess again. I wouldn't be surprised if Remy tried to get a whole week off because of Khalil.
I need 2 days, that's all.
Mama raises her brows.
Okay, 1.5, please.
She takes a deep breath and lets it out slowly. We'll see. But not a word of this to your brothers, you hear me?
Basically, she said yes, without saying yes outright. I can deal with that.
Pastor Eldridge once preached that faith isn't just believing, but taking steps toward that belief. So when my alarm goes off Tuesday morning, by faith, I don't get up, believing that Mama won't make me go to school. And to quote Pastor Eldridge, hallelujah, God shows up and shows out. Mama doesn't make me get up. I stay in bed, listening as everybody else gets ready for the day. Sekani makes it his business to tell Mama I'm not up yet.
Don't worry about her, she says. Worry about yourself.
The TV in the den blares some morning news show, and Mama hums around the house. When Khalil and 115 are mentioned, the volume lowers a whole lot and doesn't go back up until a political story comes on. My phone buzzes under my pillow. I take it out and look. Kenya finally texted me back about my new Tumblr. She would make me wait hours for a response, and her comment is short as hell. It's aight. I roll my eyes. That's about as close as I'm going to get to a compliment from her. I text back. I love you, too. Her response? I know. Smiley face. She's so petty. Part of me wonders, though, if she didn't respond last night because of drama at her house. Daddy said King's still beating Aisha up. Sometimes he hits Kenya in Lyric, too. Kenya's not the type to talk about it like that, so I ask, everything okay? The usual, she writes back. Short, but it says enough. There isn't much I can do, so I just remind her. I'm here if you need me. Her response? You better be. See? Petty. Here's the messed up part about missing school. You wonder what you would be doing if you went. At 8, I figure, Chris and I would just be getting to history, since it's our first class on Tuesdays. I send him a quick text. Won't be at school today. 2 minutes later, he replies, are you sick? Need me to kiss it and make it better? Wink, wink. He seriously typed wink, wink, instead of 2 wink emojis. I'll admit, I smile. I write back, what if I'm contagious? He says, doesn't matter. I'll kiss you anywhere. Wink, wink. I reply, is that another line? He responds in less than a minute. It's whatever you want it to be. Love you, Fresh Princess. Pause. That L word completely catches me off guard. Like a player from the other team stealing the ball right as you're about to make a layup. It takes all of your momentum, and you spend a week wondering how that steal slipped up on you. Yeah, Chris saying love you is like that, except I can't waste a week wondering about it. By not answering, I'm answering, if that makes sense. The shot clock is winding down, and I need to say something.
But what?
By not saying I before love you, he's making it more casual. Seriously, love you and I love you are different. Same team, different players. Love you isn't as forward or aggressive as I love you. Love you can slip up on you, sure, but it doesn't make an in-your-face slam dunk, more like a nice jump shot. 2 minutes pass. I need to say something. Love you, too. It's as foreign as a Spanish word I haven't learned yet, but funny enough, it comes pretty easily. I get a wink emoji in return. Just Us for Justice occupies the old Taco Bell on Magnolia Avenue, between the car wash and the cash advance place. Daddy used to take me and Seven to that Taco Bell every Friday and get us 99-cent tacos, cinnamon twists, and a soda to share. This was right after he got out of prison, when he didn't have a lot of money. He usually watched us eat. Sometimes he asked the manager, one of Mama's girlfriends, to keep an eye on us, and he went to the cash advance place next door. When I got older and discovered that presents don't just show up, I realized Daddy always went over there around our birthdays and Christmas. Mama rings the doorbell at Just Us, and Miss Ofra lets us in.
"Sorry about that," she says, locking the door. "It's just me here today."
"Oh," Mama says. "Where are your colleagues?"
"Some of them are at Garden Heights High doing a roundtable discussion. Others are leading a march on Carnation where Khalil was murdered."
It's weird to hear somebody say Khalil was murdered as easily as Miss Ofra does. She doesn't bite her tongue or hesitate. Short-walled cubicles take up most of the restaurant. They have almost as many posters as Seven has, but the kind Daddy would love, like Malcolm X standing next to a window holding a rifle, Huey Newton in prison with his fist up for black power, and photographs of the Black Panthers at rallies and giving breakfast to kids. Ms. Ofra leads us to her cubicle next to the drive-thru window. It's kind of funny, too, because she has a Taco Bell cup on her desk.
"Thank you so much for coming," she says. "I was so happy when you called, Mrs. Carter."
"Please call me Lisa. How long have you all been in this space?"
"Almost 2 years now. And if you're wondering, yes, we do get the occasional prankster who pulls up to the window and tells me they want a chalupa."
We laugh. The doorbell rings up front. "That's probably my husband," Mama says. "He was on his way." Ms. Ofra leaves, and soon Daddy's voice echoes through the office as he follows her back. He grabs a third chair from another cubicle and sets it halfway in Ms. Ofra's office, and halfway in the hall. That's how small her cubicle is.
"Sorry I'm late. Had to get Devante situated with Mr. Lewis."
"Mr. Lewis?" I ask.
"Yeah. Since I'm here, I asked him to let Devante help around the shop. Mr. Lewis needs somebody to look out for his dumb behind. Snitching on live TV." "You're talking about the gentleman who did the interview about the King Lords?" Miss Ofra asks. "Yeah, him," says Daddy. "He owns the barbershop next to my store." "Oh, wow. That interview definitely has people talking. Last I checked, it had almost 1 million views online."
"I knew it. Mr. Lewis has become a meme."
"It takes a lot of guts to be as upfront as he is. I meant what I said at Khalil's funeral, Star. It was very brave of you to talk to the police."
"I don't feel brave. With Malcolm X watching me on her wall, I can't lie. I'm not running my mouth on TV like Mr. Lewis."
"And that's okay," Ms. Ofra says. "It seemed Mr. Lewis impulsively spoke out in anger and frustration. In a case like Khalil's, I would much rather that you spoke out in a more deliberate and planned way." She looks at Mama. "You said the DA called yesterday?"
"Yes. They'd like to meet with Star tomorrow."
Makes sense. The case was turned over to their office, and they're preparing to take it to a grand jury.
What does that mean? I ask.
A jury will decide if charges should be brought against Officer Cruz. And Star will have to testify to the grand jury, Daddy says.
Miss Ofra nods.
It's a bit different from a normal trial. There won't be a judge or a defense attorney present, and the DA will ask Star questions.
But what if I can't answer them all?
What do you mean? Miss Ofra says.
The gun in the car stuff. On the news, they said there may have been a gun in the car. Like, that changes everything. I honestly don't know if there was. Miss Ofra opens a folder that's on her desk, takes a piece of paper out, and pushes it toward me. It's a photograph of Khalil's black hairbrush, the one he used in the car.
That's the so-called gun, Miss Ofra explains. Officer Cruz claims he saw it in the car door, and he assumed Khalil was reaching for it. The handle was thick enough, black enough, for him to assume it was a gun. And Khalil was black enough, Daddy adds.
A hairbrush. Khalil died over a fucking hairbrush. Miss Ofra slips the photograph back in the folder.
It'll be interesting to see how his father addresses it in his interview tonight.
Hold up. Interview? I ask. Mama shifts a little in her chair. The officer's father has a television interview that's airing tonight. I glance from her to Daddy. And nobody told me?
'Cause it ain't worth talking about, baby, Daddy says.
I look at Ms. Ofra. So his dad can give his son's side to the whole world? And I can't give mine and Khalil's? He's gonna have everybody thinking 115's the victim.
Not necessarily, Miss Ofra says. Sometimes these kinds of things backfire. And at the end of the day, the court of public opinion has no say in this. The grand jury does. If they see enough evidence, which they should, Officer Cruz will be charged and tried.
If, I repeat. A wave of awkward silence rolls in. 115's father is his voice, but I'm Khalil's. The only way people will know his side of the story is if I speak out. I look out the drive-through window at the car wash next door. Water cascades from a hose, making rainbows against the sunlight like it did 6 years ago, right before bullets took Natasha. I turn to Miss Ofra. When I was 10, I saw my other best friend get murdered in a drive-by. Funny how murdered comes out easily now.
Oh, Miss Ofra sinks back. I'm so sorry, Star.
I stare at my fingers and fumble with them. Tears well in my eyes. I've tried to forget it, but I remember everything. The shots. The look on Natasha's face. They never caught the person who did it. I guess it didn't matter enough. But it did matter. She mattered. I look at Miss Ofra, but I can barely see her for all the tears. And I want everyone to know that Khalil mattered too. Miss Ofra blinks a lot.
Absolutely.
She clears her throat.
I would like to represent you, Star. Pro bono, in fact.
Mama nods, and she's teary-eyed, too.
I'll do whatever I can to make sure you're heard, Star. Because just like Khalil and Natasha mattered, you matter. And your voice matters. I can start by trying to get you a television interview.
She looks at my parents,
if you're okay with that. As long as they don't reveal her identity, yeah,
Daddy says.
That shouldn't be a problem, she says. We will absolutely make sure her privacy is protected.
A quiet buzzing comes from Daddy's way. He takes out his phone and answers. The person on the other end shouts something, but I can't make it out.
Hey, calm down, Vontae. Say that again.